Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast on the internet. Everybody knows me as either name, probably StarsCast, because I've had that name since I worked for America Online. But anyways, it's me with another great show. Oh, wait till you hear my guest today. It's going to be wonderful. Anyways, I want to talk a little bit about the magazine, mysticlivingtoday.com. Most know that I just celebrated my 25th anniversary with the January issue. And we converted it over to a flip magazine. I still have the text version. The reason I have the text version is because of all the SEO and the content that's in there. I mean, we're talking a lot of years of information sitting in there. And I talked to my webmaster, and he says, well, let's do both. So we've done both. And I'm very, very blessed. I've got a lot of great reviews on it. I'm so happy with it. You know, it's a little scary when you start something new, but this has been what I called my dark horse. Way back when I started PlanetStars.com, I had the magazine, and this is what I really always wanted to do with it. So we have that. If you'd like to send me something, you're welcome. That's StarsCast, STARZ like in zebra, CAST like in Tom, at mysticlivingtoday.com. Be sure to send an image, any credits you want me to put in, and I'll take a look at it. There hasn't been anything that has come my way that I have refused. It doesn't have to be metaphysical. It can be spiritual, metaphysical, you know. It can be, I had somebody write about golf. I put that in too. It doesn't matter. If so long as it's good work, I'll put it out there for you. Now, StarsPsychics.com, okay, well, we've got some new things coming with that. First of all, it's $1.99 a minute for all readings. But I'm working on something with three different companies for phone service, which is going to be really nice. I have, hanging there, they're all waiting, I have 30 phone readers waiting to come with me, and you're thinking, why? Well, I think my reputation, I'm a great boss. I love what I do. I have such a passion. I don't just take you off the site for nothing. You know, we communicate. And so, you know, word gets around, hey, we want to work for you. So that's coming. Hopefully I'll have it ready for the February 14th show, because I want to bring a bunch of them on where they'll be able to answer questions, tarot card readers, channelers, mediums, all that kind of stuff. So, without further ado, I'm going to bring in my guest. He's a fellow astrologer, a psychologist, an expert in dreams and dream interpretation. He's been, you know, on television. He's got his own podcast. And he has a new book called The Psychic Dreamer, which we want to go into. So welcome, Michael Lennox. How are you today?
It's so great to be here. I'm doing wonderfully well.
Good. Okay, let's get started on how... I always ask this, how did you get started in all of this? We all began somewhere. I began somewhere,
yes,
so
yes.
Did you. And so what piqued your interest to get into all this?
Well, I will tell you that dreams came first. And part of what inspired me as a teenager to be serious about wanting to hear people's dreams and responding to them was that my mom was getting a master's in social work when I was about 15 years old, and the book, Freud's Interpretation of Dreams, showed up on the bookshelf. I read that book. Now, I don't know how much I understood of Freud's writing at 15 years old, But I certainly understood that dreams had value, that they could be interpreted, that there was material in the dream that could reveal interesting stuff. So in high school, in the hallways, when kids would say, I had the craziest dream last night, I would ask people to share their dreams with me, and I would say whatever came up in my intuitive response. Now, I don't remember the things I would have said at 15, but I do have a gift for this, and it would have been activated even as a teenager. And I kept following that thread throughout my life. And by the time I was in my sort of mid to late 20s, I was doing workshops with helping people to interpret their dreams, and the rest is sort of history. Now, the astrology piece is a little different, but also connects to when I was a kid. My mother was a member of the National Organization for Women in the 70s, and there was a symbol for that organization that was essentially the glyph for feminine principle. And my mother explained that to me. It was a circle with a little cross below it. She also explained that there was a masculine symbol, a circle with an arrow sticking up in a kind of phallic way. Well, you might recognize these two symbols, Natalie, as the glyph for Mars and Venus.
Yes.
So when
yes.
I was sitting in my very first astrology reading at 24 years old, the astrologer provided a copy of the chart and slid it across the table, and I followed along. And because I knew those two symbols, I began to feel like I understood what she was talking about at a visceral level. And it is true that when I eventually began to study astrology in my 30s, about 8-9 years later, I experienced astrology more as a function of remembering it than as if I was learning something brand new.
Yeah, you were fortunate because you started young and you kept with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like anything really interrupted that training that you needed, and look where you are today. And, you know, people, and you probably find this, even if they don't know who you are, you'll start talking about astrology, and their eyes get really big, and you pique their interest. I was at a dinner on Friday, and this guy said, you know astrology? Like it's some kind of, you know, I don't know what. And I said, yeah, I dabbled in it, and I told them my story, how I got into it. And usually, like for me, I got into it because my parents died less than 5 months apart, and I wanted to know why.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But my best friend, I have to blame her. She's no longer with us. But she said to me, you can do this. And I said, I can do what? She said, learn astrology. And I said, oh, come on. You know? So it was her. Did I get my answers? Not really. But what it
not
did
really,
is it
piqued, no,
it piqued my interest, Michael. You know, it allowed me to develop some skills, and then I met another fellow astrologer. But, you know, look what I'm doing now.
Right. You may not have answered the big question of why did my parents die both so soon, because that's not an answerable question. But you certainly got introduced to one of the most powerful contextual tools for helping us navigate a really crazy energy of life in a body. I don't know how people who don't use astrology manage.
Well, sometimes, you know, some of the signs, as you know, and I don't want to delve too much into astrology. I want to get into your psychic dreamer book. But, you know, sometimes, oh, you're a Virgo. Oh, you're a double Virgo. Well, I have all fire signs in my chart. And I don't know where yours are, but my sun is in my 10th at 2 degrees. And so, you know, no matter what I learn throughout the years, this is where you're going to shine. This is going to be your prominent place. And it's true. It has happened for me. I mean, I'm not notorious in the good sense or the bad sense.
No, but you identify your sense of self vis-a-vis what you do. And any good astrologer would look at your chart and say, sun in the 10th house of work and career would mean you will know your sense of identity most powerfully through your work and career consciousness. And, I find that you just, that when you know how to use astrology as a context tool, there's just nothing better than it.
That's true. But let's get into your book, and I have questions here.
Sure.
Psychic Dreamer. Okay, well, we all have dreams. Well, we do. Yes. Some say I don't remember it, but you can remember them. I have great dreams. But you know, I think when you step into the, I call it the realm that we're in, you touch on many, many different things, and all you have to do is start to believe, which I'm a firm believer, and it doesn't mean that they're going to be prophetic, but they may give you insight into things that are coming your way. They may give you insight into answers that you have questions, you know, why am I doing this? What should I do here? So tell us about Psychic Dreamer. I want to hear all about it.
Okie dokie. So my world in dreams, in terms of books that I've written and workshops and classes that I'm teaching, is all about helping people interpret the sort of psychological style dreams that we have, nightmares and the chaotic dreams that are reflecting our deeper sort of psyche. I like to say that we go into the unconscious in the dream world and we work out our fears, our resistances, where we feel unworthy, where we're afraid, which is one of the reasons why some of the memorable dreams that we have are nightmares, because I think they're serving a purpose. They allow us to process unconscious stress so that we can wake up and do a better job at life on life's terms, you know, the next day. But there's also this idea of perception that is beyond the rational perception. Right, that the rational mind is that thinking mind that we know, like who we are, where we are, when we are, and that's the identifying mind, the part of us that's talking to us all the time that we think is us. Well, they don't call intuition the still small voice for nothing. It's really quiet and hard to hear. But when we go to sleep, that rational mind is also asleep. So all of us are freer in the dream state to be able to perceive the mystical phenomena that can happen in the human experience, like precognitive experiences of having a dream about something that's going to take place in your waking life a week or two later, like visitation dreams where someone who has passed away visits you in the dream state and you know it's not a typical dream because it feels completely different. Like having a dream that's powerful and then talking to your best friend or your partner or your lover or something the next morning to find out you both were having the same dream. So I believe that there are these mystical experiences that happen more frequently when we are asleep. And when I was asked to write this book by my publisher, part of how I wrote it, the main part of how, was just collecting stories from people who had these experiences. And of course, what we find is the experiences are very similar because there really is deep mystical phenomenon that we can tap into in the dream state.
Well, you know, and people say, well, I don't remember my dreams, but I think if, you know, I have more than dreams. I have etheric incidences,
yes,
that happen, like my phone will ring. It's not my phone. It's a real phone. I mean, I started calling out on the last number back because I thought, oh, my God, I mean, is this weird or what, right? No, it's not weird. But sometimes, you know, I think, too, Michael, you have to interpret what you are getting. Some, you know, I mean, you can go to all the seers and all of that in the world, but really sometimes it just needs to come from you. What do you think it means? What do you think? Because it applies to you. I've had, believe it or not, 3 knocks on my wall, which is a sign of death. That's an old tale. That's an old, old tale. And it came true. It came true. I've had the strum of a harp, and my dear friend, I asked her, she was a medium. I said, well, what do you think? She said, well, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. They're trying to tell me something. Well, she passed away in 2 days. That was the most horrific.
Wow, yeah.
I actually heard a harp strumming, somebody strumming a harp. I took it to be an angel, and it was a message for me. Like, not bad. I mean, it's just that somebody was ascending, and it was close to me, and it was her. And, I mean, I was, of course, devastated. But we didn't know.
Yeah.
None of us knew. You know,
right? But
your dreams.
Exactly,
okay, so
this is exactly what the book is about. The book is about people like you who have consistent experiences that are beyond just the, oh, I had this crazy dream last night where all of these different things happen, but where we actually get experiences that are that blur the line between, you know, what we call real and what we call the imaginal or the universal mind behind all of that reality. You sound like you've got an incredible instrument for perceiving mystical phenomenon, and it does sound like at night while you're dreaming and sleeping, you're having some profound access to information.
I am. Yeah, but sometimes, of course, I mean, if it's really – sometimes I remember, but if I hear something, you bet I remember. I mean, I wake up.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had the phone ring so loud, it was almost like somebody saying, listen up, pay attention.
Yes.
You need to hear this. It wasn't just a little ding. No, it was loud. It woke. I mean, I sat up. I thought, oh, my phone. But as soon as I figured out, Michael, that it wasn't my phone at all, it was the etheric. It was that point before you wake up, just that point
right.
where you're susceptible
right.
to beautiful things coming to you. I had a phone ring again this week. I usually get something every week. Not every day. It's not always. But yes, but you're right. And I think that's part of what I can do. I mean, we all have gifts, and some of us don't even realize it. Now, I think you probably told me what exactly is a psychic dreamer. Well, I guess maybe you can tell us. Is that just you have dreams that are really from the psychic realm, or what is it? What does that mean to you?
Well, I to me it means something that is built into the human body for all of us. I think we all have intuition. We all have the ability to perceive material and information that comes from other places. Now, not everybody is oriented to sort of recognize this language as, you know, as other people. I sometimes refer to, like, people's mystical abilities kind of like singing. If you can speak, you can sing. But maybe not everybody wants to hear you sing if you don't have a good ear for replicating tone, right? But you have
right.
the ability, right?
Yeah.
And everybody can learn to sing a little bit better if they focus on it. So for me, a psychic dreamer is everybody who is already experiencing connection to mystical information while they're sleeping, but perhaps haven't developed the awareness yet to be able to readily remember and connect to this information. And the book is designed really to inspire people to focus on their dreams, make sure that they're remembering them, to be making sure that during the waking life they also have some kind of a meditative practice, so that the process of going into sleep, when the rational mind goes away and we're open to deeper perceptions, it's a muscle. It can be strengthened. But
right.
you got to know about that world to even begin the strengthening. And so the book is really designed to inspire people by telling them stories that hopefully some of the readers will say, I think I've had that experience too.
Right. But you see, and the simplest thing for me, they may hear things too, and I just chalk it off as, oh, they don't even pay any attention. But you see, I pay attention. I always have.
Yes.
And I think you develop it. You're right. You really can. You can develop it. You can be more in tune if you really want to be. How does one achieve self-investigation?
Well, I think you first – I mean, now we're sort of in a whole other topic of how I work with people where I use – as a psychologist, I help people do the work of self-investigation. And so my answer to how do we do self-investigation is the first thing we do is we stop paying attention to other people or outside circumstances that trigger us when we're bothered.
Mm-hmm.
And focus on the inside of us. It's like, okay, why am I bothered by this? It may feel like it's because Marcy said that thing to me on Tuesday, except that it's probably much older than that, coming from childhood and family dynamics. And so I teach people how to move through the process of stopping the focus on outside of us and focus on, all right, if I'm triggered, something's happening inside of me, what can I sort of do to explore what might be challenging me or troubling me based on my past, based on my family, based on my history? And this, by the way, this work of clearing out old wounds and opening up the inside of you to know yourself better also increases your ability to perceive psychic phenomena. Because the inside of us gets muddled with all our old neuroticisms, and when we clean and clear some of those away, just like you remember your experiences and then can share them and maybe teach others through them, when someone has cleaned up some of their inside muck, they're going to hear their intuitive, still small voice much more powerfully.
And I have to say this, it's very difficult to do that. We all live in a world, I mean, like you said, you might be remembering something that somebody said to you. I mean, I get a lot, it takes a lot of work. I get a lot of people, not online, I mean, I have a vast, because of my magazine, there's just people all over the world. I don't get it from them. But the people that I know, they can really hurt me. And so when I hear something like that, that's my moon in Leo. When I hear something like that, okay, right away, okay, well, I don't really like that, or why did they say that about me, or why did they say that to me? If I dwell on it too long, it takes over. You mustn't let it take over. Erase it off that piece of paper. Don't go back and relive it, because it's them, not you. But you know, we do this kind of stuff, though, Michael. We are in training all the time, and we have learned that it doesn't do you any good. You cannot change the past. You cannot change what somebody has said. So why don't you just live in the moment where you are and move forward? But sometimes it's not that simple. I mean, sometimes somebody will really – I have one person that she does this to me all the time. It's very condescending to me. And then I think to myself, you know, I wonder if she's just jealous in some way. Why, I don't know. But you see, that triggers something else. So what we have to do, first of all, we have to get your book. But besides that, we have to – just put it on a shelf or leave it there. Don't go back. Don't pick up that piece of paper again and go back to it, or that book. Don't.
Right.
Because it's not going to help you. Because it's going to take you back steps instead of letting you move forward.
Yeah.
I've been working on it, especially with this person. And I had another, and this is good, because I had another person in my life who gnawed at me every single day. Well, of course, she's not with me anymore at all.
Mm.
But you know what? A part of me felt bad. Isn't that stupid? No, part of me felt bad because I knew she needed what I was paying her. But she was causing me a lot of hurt. She was causing me discomfort. And, you know, when somebody annoys you like that, it's time to let them go. Goodbye. See
you. Absolutely.
You know, so those people that will be listening, and we have somebody that's on the line right now. I haven't talked to them yet, but you need to let them go. As sooner you do that, the better you'll be able to move forth in everything that you're supposed to know and you're supposed to do. And that's really the truth. That, you know, now back to your book. Okay, is there a way?
Yeah.
To interpret your dreams, say you wake up and you have this, you don't know if it's prophetic or not, maybe I'm on the water, on a boat, you know, and I don't go on water because I don't like water. I mean, I'm near water, I live near water, but I don't put me on a boat, no. But say you have a dream about a boat and you're on a cruise and you're having a good time, can that be prophetic? Does that mean, I'm going to go on a cruise? I don't think it does.
I doubt it, honey. I think you're talking about overly putting magical thinking into dream. That if you have some random dream about a cruise ship, I would never go first to, that might be precognitive. Precognitive dreams feel different than the storied dreams where you might be on a boat and then this happens and then you're on a mountaintop and then you're in an ice cream car. You know, those dreams can absolutely be interpreted. They are stories. They are stories being told in the language of symbols. And each of the symbols might have universal meaning based on the thing it is, what the thing does, what its use or purpose is, or what the setting in nature might mean to the most people. Like if I use a simple example for this. If you have a dream of I'm walking on a path through the woods, I come upon a snake, I'm frightened by it, and I wake up. Well, a path in the woods is a very private walk. So when we look at a dream content and someone is moving in their dream, how they're moving sort of tells us, is this a dream about, say, their bigger social life? They might be driving in such a dream because we drive around the world. And so universally we think of driving as like the big social movement through life. So a walk in the woods would be a personal journey for that person, right? So now we know we're in a dream that's about something intimate and personal for them. Then we come upon a snake. Well, what does everybody in third grade learn about snakes in the Western world? That they shed their skins. So they become a symbol of change and transformation.
Yes.
Even in the Old Testament, where there's a snake that millions of people would associate with the Old Testament snake, that snake creates change and transformation for Adam and Eve. You'll find the snake on the caduceus of the physician's emblem because the physician transforms a person from ill health to wellness. So snake represents change and transformation as a symbol. So now we have a dream that's about someone having an intimate consideration about how they're walking through their life and that change is coming or change is upon them or there's a big transformation that's taking place. I would not call that a prophetic dream about change about to come. I would say that that's a sort of a psychological reflection of somebody about to or in the crux of a lot of change and transformation. So for my money, every pedestrian dream like this can be interpreted. The thing about mystical dreams is those are less about interpreting and more about receiving the experience and somehow leaning into what the information might be being shown to you.
And I just think that whatever we get from dreams mine is totally different, but I think it's our interpretation sometimes that you'll get something. And sometimes you just need to let it go. You can't sit and dwell on it and say, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? And just be happy. Just go forth. Don't create yourself some kind of a circle that you can't get out of kind of like thing, you know? And I love learning about dreams. You know, there's a lot of authors that have written books about dreams. You know, what does this mean? What does that mean? And I've had them on my show, so I get them sent to me. You know, I'll look through them, and like if I have something that I want to, I'll look it up, and I'll think, well, that doesn't mean that to me. So you see, it's not what a book is going to tell you. It's how you feel. What are you getting from this?
The only thing that I would add to that is that the sacred holding of a dream that you're describing, that the dream belongs to the dreamer, must also include the things that that dreamer moves towards for an interpretation. One should not have to feel forced to interpret every dream that comes, but if dreamer X has a dream and that dreamer has purchased a dream dictionary that they love and use, then them using that dream dictionary to work with their dream is sacred because their soulful self drew that dream dictionary towards them, which is very different than you being sort of given a book that wasn't organically being, you know, called for by your heart.
Right.
So therefore, it's not for you necessarily.
Right. No. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, and there are a lot of dream books out there, lots of them. I mean, and they've been around for for years and years and years, you know. I think what you're saying is right. Now, your book just got released on January 8th, is that right?
Correct. It's brand new.
9 days old. Yay! And look, I have you on my show. How great is that? Okay, so I have a caller. I don't know if you want to – I don't know if they have a question or not. Do you want me to see what they have to say here?
I'm game.
You're game? Okay, good. I'm game, you're game. Okay, hold on. Hi, you're live on the air with Dr. Michael Lennox. You have a question? Hello? Oh, I guess not. Okay. We'll put him on hold.
Oh, well.
Okay. All right. So I'm thinking here. I love to think. Sometimes I think too much. No, it's true. Okay. Where did this book come from? I mean, I know what you do, but you've written so many books. I mean, oh my God, look at all these books you've written. You wrote books for Llewellyn. Lots for Llewellyn. Why did you venture off on your own?
And that all for Llewellyn, which is how this book happened. So
yeah.
Way back in the day, I'll tell the long version of the story. About 15 years ago, I was finishing up with I was done with my doctorate in psychology. I was fascinated with dreams. I started working on a dream dictionary of my own. When I finished, at some point during that process, I found an agent who was interested in representing me, and she asked me to do a competitive analysis about what other dream dictionaries had been out there. And once I did that and I showed it to her, she said, oh, no, there's too many. I'm not interested in representing you anymore. So it's like, all right, if I can't get a dream dictionary published out there by a publisher, I was fascinated with the idea of what happens between parents and children and dreams. Because it's so common for a parent to go into a child's bedroom who's been disturbed by a dream and dismiss it by saying it's just a dream. And I thought, that's terrible. And what an opportunity missed, because talking to a child about their dream life is a very intimate conversation to have, where a parent is holding space for something powerful that's happening inside that child. I think that's a beautiful opportunity for parents and children. So I wrote that book proposal, got an agent, and during the talk about that book, I mentioned that I had once written a dream dictionary, and that was enough for them. And they were like, all right, we want everything from you. We'll start with the dream dictionary. And then another book followed, and then another book followed. And this one was because Llewellyn, my publisher, wanted a book about psychic dreams. So they asked me, and I said yes, because if I didn't say yes, someone else would have written this book. So in some ways, it was an interesting exercise because it didn't emerge out of my heart, right? So I didn't have some great passion to write the book. Where that passion came from was from the stories from the people who follow me, because that's what I did. Every time I was starting another chapter, I would put an email out to my following and say, all right, have you been visited by a loved one in a dream? I'm writing that chapter now. And the stories were just so rich and vibrant and fascinating. I enjoyed, that's what sort of fueled the idea of propelling me through the drudgery of writing books. Writing books is hard. Having written books is fun.
Yeah. Well, I've told people I have a fairy tale in my head that I've started it, but I guess I get pulled in so many directions. I think when it's time, Natalie will sit there and not bother with anything
else.
Yeah,
you've got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, I do. Oh, yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you about a dream I had. You're going to love this.
Yeah.
My husband passed away 12 years ago from Alzheimer's.
Okay.
A few years later, my dear friend who was a medium was still alive then, and we talked about it. My dream was we were in a doorway. There was a threshold. He was on one side, I was on the other. He reached over, I didn't go cross, he reached over and gave me a hug and he said, I'm sorry.
Ooh.
Now, I mean, because it was an awful phase that I went through with him. I kept him home, but I don't want to go into that. But anyways, she said to me, first of all, she said he had to have had permission to do that. They never step over into the real world. But she said, obviously, it was something important for him to continue on. Now, what do you think it meant?
Well, I think it was a classic visitation dream. So that to me, that means he was really there. This was not some artifact of your psyche or your shadow self working something out.
Yeah.
He was there energetically. I can't speak to permission, non-permission. I don't get shown those things. But I certainly know that people get shown things, and if they, you know, if your friend had some wisdom from her experience, I can, you know, I can buy that. But the thing that makes it a visitation dream based on all of the ones that I've heard is the singularity of setting and the singularity of message. Visitation dreams take place in one setting. They don't go all over the place. In fact, they are often take place in the very room that a person is sleeping in. And I cannot tell you how many I have heard take place on a park bench. Which just sounds like a movie.
Yeah, you know, this one was in a well-lit room, kind of a yellowed room. I saw the door. I saw myself. I saw him. And it was, how did it make me feel? Well, it made me feel pretty good because he was evil. And so it was kind of, you know, and she was talking to me about it, and she said this was his way of saying he was sorry what he did to you. I mean, he was evil. And so, you know, and she asked me right away, she said, well, how does it make you feel? I said, well, it doesn't take away everything that I went through, but it's nice, you know, because I believe that. I mean, I'm not a skeptic. I mean, you can show me something that's on my wall, I see it. I mean, okay, good. I mean, I've had some other things, too, that you would love. But besides that, I think it meant something to him and to me because he had to express this to me because he knew he didn't want to leave it like it was.
That's right. And what I like about this story, what I like most about it, is that in the stories that I was shown for the book and over the years of just hearing people talk about such experiences, the conveyance is almost always of, like, I love you and all is well. But what's fascinating about this story is it's the same conveyance, only it's not I love you and all is well because that was not the message he owed you.
Right.
He
no,
owed
right.
you the I am sorry for what I brought to you, and that was a singular message, more evidence for me that this was a visitation dream. And I even think crossing the doorway, you know, the threshold.
Reaching over. Yeah, he didn't cross it. He reached over to grab me, to hold me.
Yeah, that's a great physical image for the veil between the realm he's in and the realm you're in.
Yeah. He thought I killed his wife.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's just... But anyways, So, yeah, I mean, I just talking to you, it came back to me. I don't think about it that often, really. It's been quite a while since it's come back to me. But did it make me feel better? Yeah. Did it erase what he did? No. No. It'll never erase what he did to me. Never.
I will posit one little thing about that. That's just a little possibility that lives in my head, hearing you say that. What if you are more forgiving than you would otherwise have been if that visitation had never happened? Is that possible?
I guess. But you know what I always say is, I miss what he was, not what he became.
Ooh, that's beautiful. That's the truth.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah, I mean, he loved my son. He loved my daughter-in-law. He never saw my granddaughter. We kept her away, but, oh, he hated me. He wanted to destroy me. And so, you know, you have that for a long, long time, and then you start to think, I mean, I know why he did it. He, first of all, this was his way of, he wanted to show me that there's a other side to him, that I knew of him the way he was, that this was, it's almost like he didn't want me to remember what he became, and that's true. And, you know, people often ask me, authors will say, well, why don't you write about it? Because I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go through that again. I mean, I had Jesus come to me. I have had a lot of beautiful things happen to me while I'm waking. And I just feel I'd be happy to help somebody that's going through something similar. But everything is different. You know what I'm saying? It's a different.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's is different. I mean, you could have somebody, a mother or a father, but to have your husband or your wife, that is even worse. And so I only bring it up when I have to, but I don't think about it every day. No, I don't. I'm sure he's proud of me. I'm sure he's proud of me. I just know it. He taught me how to use the computer for the first time, but he said, what I don't have to teach you is how to type, because I type really well, but that I learned in high school. You know how the story goes. And he would talk about me to everybody else about how great I was, but he would never tell me. So I think this is his way of, you know, I have to do something for her. I have to, and he did it. He did it.
Yeah, he did what his soul was capable of doing.
Exactly.
And I'm sure that on some energetic, multidimensional level, this was not only important for him, but probably helpful.
I hope so. I mean, I didn't even say anything. It was so quick. You know, it was so quick, but I thought it was profound because he reached over the threshold of that door. So he was on the other side, and I was on the other side. So, yeah, it's something that I do remember. You know, it's a nice thing to remember, absolutely. Now, I have another caller here. Let's try this one. I don't know. Before you have to go here, hold on. Let's get this person on. Hi, you're live on the air with Michael Lennox and Natalie. Can we help you?
Hi, I don't know what kind of question I could ask. Any questions?
Well, what was the question that sparked you to call?
I just was listening. I'm just listening to Dr. Michael Lennox. This is Amla.
Hey. So, well, now you got me. Did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, sure. You know, actually, it's a follow-up from your YouTube, the general YouTube for this week, actually. When the planets are in Pluto, how does that affect the 20-year Pluto in Aquarius?
Well, Pluto, the planet, is we call Pluto the Lord of the Underworld. His movements reflect deep change and transformation, like all the way at the level of death and rebirth. There are two planets that deal with great change. Pluto is the slow changes that like go all the way down to the bottom and a complete reinvention. Uranus is responsible for the sudden and fast changes. So what we do in astrology, or one thing we can do with, say, the movement of Pluto, is we can look at the sign that he's in and make some determinations about where all of the deep changes and transformations on the planet are going to happen. So, for example, Capricorn, which is where Pluto has been, where he is right now, and where he has been since 2007 and 2008, is a sign that represents structure. Structures like banking and housing and governments. So Pluto moving through Capricorn since 2007 has been responsible, or reflecting, not responsible, has been reflecting all of the big changes in structures like governments, banking, housing, etc. Aquarius is the sign where Pluto is moving. Aquarius is the sign that represents things like technology, the digital age, the information age, and the larger age that we're moving into, the age of Aquarius, is all about a world where the community is sort of lifted up. So you've already seen Pluto moving into Aquarius last year, creating all kinds of changes in the world of technology and AI and all of the shifts that are happening in that world. So Pluto is about to move into Aquarius for the next, like, 20 years. And what it means for us on the planet is lots and lots of changes that reflect technology shift and a movement towards a world that cares for all its people.
Yes, that makes sense. I just, because you talked about that, the rising and the moon, which was my initial email question. I just was wondering about the planets in Aquarius itself,
right?
Like, generally speaking?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there, at this point, there's only Pluto moving into Aquarius. Like, that's who's in Aquarius. And now, so what we were talking about, you know, Pluto conjuncting someone's Mars or conjuncting someone's moon or their rising, anybody with placements at 0, 1, or 2, or 3 degrees
right.
of Aquarius will have a personal level of change and transformation during the year or two that we're about to move through.
Got
I hope this has been
Got
helpful.
It. Yes, this is totally helpful. You're awesome. Thank you for your podcast. Thank
You're
you for
so
the show.
Welcome,
I still want to listen. Thank you.
Yeah, please. Keep listening.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Natalie.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, also, Michael, Pluto can be major transformation. I always think of Pluto as messing things up.
Well,
you know,
that's
okay,
true.
I got you
but
now.
You
Let's
not,
see what we how we can mess things up. It can do that.
Yes,
it's not my favorite. Pluto is not my favorite.
Archetypally, what Pluto is always doing is changing things. What Pluto will sometimes do is mess things up as it changes things. You see the distinction?
Yes,
it
exactly.
It always has to be about change that's ultimately valuable, and the process of change can be really, really messy and difficult.
yeah, it's, and it, you're right, the underworld. And, you know, all of the changes that have been going on with the digital world are not always good. When I started, I don't know when you started, there wasn't Google, there wasn't, the only browser we had was, it was called Thunderhawk, and AOL, and Internet Explorer. Now you've got all of this stuff. So as soon as all of this stuff, I happen to think the Internet is a mess. I think it opened up too many doors. I think it'll level out, though. I'm confident
it will level out. Not only will it level out, what's happening in the digital world is the natural evolution of the human organism. We are stuck in the transition where I think we're just screwed. It's so difficult to sort of live half
it
in an
is
old
exactly
paradigm
how I feel.
And half in a new one.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm so happy that there are actual books, still books, because everything is online. You know this, Michael. I like to hold a book. I like to look at the cover. I mean, I get sent books from everybody, and I've got bookshelves and bookshelves, but I'll tell you something. I like to look at them, and I like to turn the pages. I like to feel the book.
Yeah.
You know, and
real,
some of this stuff is all online. Well, that's a bunch of garbage. Yeah. No. But I really think books will be around so long as there are people like yourself writing them. And maybe someday I'll have my fairy tale. I have the name of it, but I don't – and I have what it's about, but – Geez, how did you start your first book? Did you just sit down and type away, or what did you do?
You know, I will tell you that I am a natural born writer, so it is very organic for me to write. But it is difficult to go through the process of writing a book where there's this just an enormous hill of a blank page. And
I know.
you know, it's really, the challenge is really just sitting down and disciplining and finding the way that works for you as an individual. I had a very fortunate experience a bunch of years ago. In 2012, I spent about 8 months living on a very beautiful ranch in an idyllic setting where I got to do like a 3 month process where from like 9 to 12, I'd lock myself in a studio and I didn't leave and I only wrote. And I gave myself permission to not write if I was having a difficult day writing that day, but I couldn't leave the space. And what happened over those 3 months, there were some very big, painful days. I found the part of me that is the natural writer inside of me. It became easier after I had that experience of like just closing the door and saying, what does this body look like when it comes to writing? And that was a bit of a game changer for me. And now it's just a matter of just sitting down every day.
But you're really good.
Thank you. And I've gotten good at it. And I will be tell you that I, at a certain point last year, feeling overwhelmed by this book, I was like, well, let me see how much I've written. So I stopped for a moment and I counted up all of the words of what I had generated. And I found out that I was almost finished. But I had no sense of that while I was writing. It was just a function of what am I going to write on this day and can I get some significant writing done yet?
Yeah, it's not easy. Of course, you see what I'm doing, it's not fact. It's about other lives is really what it is.
And that kind of writing, it's essentially storytelling. You're talking
it
about
is.
A whole other creative
And you know
project.
What? I just wrote for the new issue of the magazine from the editor. And my gal who helps me with this, she says, you need to write this. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I hate this. So you know what I did? I said to myself, Natalie, just talk. Talk and type what you're
there
talking.
There you go.
So that's what I did, and I sent it to her, and I said, well, you know, maybe take a look at it. She said, it's perfect. She said, it really is. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. I mean, that's what you are, your worst critic. But I can talk. If I could just talk and write what I'm talking, it's great. I mean, you know.
Well, I think that is the way to do it, because the secret to writing is to simply write the dirty first draft. And most people who struggle are often like reading the page as they're writing it, thinking, is this any good? But the best way to write is just to spit a bunch of shit onto the page and then go back and see what you have. And if you know how to write like you talk, then you're going to get stuff out on the page very organically. And it sounds like when you do that, you're actually also writing well enough that an outside objective person will look and say, this is good. So you may have found it, honey.
I may have found it talking to you. But I did. You were talking about this, and I'm thinking, you know, everybody says I can talk, and I can talk to people that I don't even know. So, all right, Natalie, you've got to write what you're talking, so I talk, and that's how I wrote from the editor.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so you have encouraged me to do this, and I appreciate that so much. I most appreciate you being on my show, and I know we have to go shortly here, but it's just such an honor to have you, and we, you know, the listeners, Michael and I talked before airtime, and we said, oh, this is going to be easy. It has been easy. I have never struggled with anybody on the radio. I was only intimidated by one, I thought, but I wasn't. He wrote the screenplays for 2 movies that were very successful. So I thought, oh, God, how am I going to talk to this man? He's going to just think that he's higher than whatever. But you know what? It was wonderful because
was wonderful.
I just talked. It wasn't a script.
Right.
I just talked. Yeah,
that's
so
right.
It was easy.
Just
so sharing information and stories and being kind to each other and having a rapport like you and I have. And I'm so grateful you came on my show. And I want everybody to get your new book. It's called Psychic Dreamer. And also, I want to tell you about his website. It's called Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Lennox, L-E-N-N-O-X.com. He's got everything imaginable. He's got dream circles. That's got to be interesting. His astrology school, his sessions, his podcast, everything is there, classes. You're not going to want to miss this. It's really a nice site. I have already put stuff in my magazine about your book. Angela sent me something. Oh, yeah,
yay.
It's there. Yeah, oh, yeah. This was before I even knew I was going to have you as a guest.
Oh,
you know, they'll
cute.
Send
oh,
me
I'm
stuff.
Excited.
Yeah, yes. they'll send me stuff, and she'll say, how would you like him as your guest? I said, can you get him? Yeah, I can get him. Give me the dates. And so there's another one who's pretty famous in her own right, and I didn't think I could get her, but she said, send me some dates. You got her.
Well,
so that's
wonderful.
A feather
it's
in my
been
cap,
a delight
Michael.
To be here. Yay. It's been delightful.
Yeah, yeah. And I adore you, and the best of luck to you, and hopefully you'll be on my show again. And thank you for the guests that have called in, and the one that asked a question, and the other one, I'm sure she got a lot of information from us going back and forth. And the book is called Psychic Dreamer. And I'd like everybody to have a great day. I'll be on again next week, same time, same station. And, Michael, you have an awesome day, and keep writing and keep doing. Don't stop.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, how I always end my show, and Michael, you're going to love this. It is, believe in things you cannot see, they really are there. And with that, I'll say goodbye and have a great day. And remember, it's a beautiful world out there. Take time to look at it. Bye-bye.
That was great, honey. We done? I think we're done. I think.